Okay, dear Dhamma friends, we are coming to the next item of this mindfulness for young adult session. That is a short Dhamma sermon. Basically, we were discussing Parabhava Sutta, which is available in the Sutta Nipata. And Parabhava Sutta is basically based on a questionnaire, a kind of a discussion between one deity and the Buddha. So this particular deity is interested of understanding various reasons for downfall. And he is asking one by one, and Buddha give a very easy to understand answers, and then explaining one by one. So actually we have come to the end of the sutta now, and we only have to cover a few verses. And most of them today are very much related to the family well-being and very much into the economic terms. Now, the verse going like this. Atita yobbano poso aneti timbaruttani tassa issa nasupati tam parabhavato mukham. Now, this is kind of a marriage which has happened without proper matching in a way. So, a very old man has taken a woman who is quite young. On such situation, the marriage is in a kind of a difficult situation. There is no proper matching. And as a result of that, various doubts, various jealousies, miserliness, mismatches, misunderstandings are going to happen. So therefore, Buddha mentioned if a particular old person takes a very young woman as his wife, so then it could be a downfall, cause of downfall. And then after mentioning that, the deity mentioned, okay, I recognize that particular reason for downfall. Please explain me the 11th cause of downfall. Then Buddha mentioned, itting sonding vikiranin, purisang vapi thadisang, issariyasming thapeti tang para bhavato mukham. If one places in authority a debauched woman, a spendthrift, or a man of similar nature, that is a cause of downfall. Now, this is very much like we are keeping someone who is not careful in spending. Now, even in the family situation or in a society level, in a particular institute, it is necessary to carefully manage what we are earning. Say, if it is the family setting. Now the father may be earning in the old style. So assume that the father is earning and the mother and the children are being protected by him. And mother basically have to take care of how properly what the father is earning has to be spread, has to be spent. But if she is not careful on that, if she spend carelessly, recklessly, and then actually they're going to bankrupt in a way. If we apply this same theory to a particular institute, if there are people who are not responsible for taking care of what they have earned, and their expenditures are much larger than the earnings, then they are going to be a kind of a difficult situation. Even if we apply to a country situation, if we are not properly balancing what we earn with what we spend, then there could be very difficult situation. Now, here basically we are talking about some economic terms. So I thought of taking another sutta to explain this. So this is a very common and known sutta when we are talking of the economic terms. It is called Vyaggapajja Sutta, also called as Diga Janu Sutta. So there are actually, Buddha mentioned certain causes, how to maintain proper economy, how to maintain the family well-being. So there are the terms are very interesting. So there are four causes which is conducive to maintain a happy household life is mentioned by the Buddha in this particular sutta. උත්ථාන සම්පදා, ආරක්ක සම්පදා, කල්යාණ මිත්‍රතා, සම ජීවිකතා. Now, when we consider a family life, when we consider a particular institute, a department, a country, so all require a fair amount of effort. Because if the people are quite lethargic, not interested in working, and not efficient, then always there could be a kind of a downfall. And as we just discussed, if they are not careful about how they are spending their earnings, again there could be a kind of a downfall. And Uttan Sampada basically explained that how people are sort of energetic to work hard. It's not that people are going to simply give away money. Rather, we have to earn money. So as a country, as a family, so we have to work hard, then only we can save something. If we are simply ignoring things and not careful about what we earn and not spending enough time, not dedicating ourselves, then of course we can't earn enough money. Whatever the wealth, it's quite difficult to earn. So earning therefore is one important thing, and how righteously one is earning. So that is another aspect Buddha highlights here. Particularly he mentioned that one has to honestly do some hard work, proper work, honest work, some sort of a dedication which is fairly reasonable to earn something. Now the typical attitude is that we provide as little as possible, but we are expecting a huge salary. So that's the typical attitude people might have. So they don't want to really honestly work. Sometimes people are coming late, but sign as they are on time. So as a result of that, certain departments, they have to spend a lot of money to properly, say, monitor their coming and going, arrival times and departure times. So basically, likewise, so people are not honest in their task. And again, they are not effortful. Sometimes when they come, spend a few hours having the breakfast. Then they start work maybe around 10 a.m. Then again, after some time, they're going for another tea. Then now the lunch time. Then a little break, lunch break. Then after that, they are preparing to go home. So this is the typical, and we know that the typical government setup, so people are quite lethargic. They are not effortful. They don't want to spend honestly their time on work. But the other side is also there on certain other times, other companies, or say certain situations. So people are not properly rewarded. Even though they are effortfully working, contributing, hard working, they are not properly rewarded. So that is also there. Anyway, but what Buddha highlights here is Uttana Sampada, that always one has to have that energy to raise up. So without being sort of lethargic, lazy, so one has to have enough energy to rise up and to do some hard work. And again, it has to be a righteous work. Probably you can remember in Samma Ajiva, Buddha mentioned about five types of trade which are not suitable, like weapon trading, say, poison trading, then animal trading. Likewise, there are certain trading that Buddha mentioned, those are not suitable. On the other hand, sometimes people do various frauds, cheating. But on the other hand, what Buddha recommend is honest kind of earning. So basically, in the good old days, so in the agricultural society, so most of them are farmers. So here the context is given with respect to farming. So they are spending a lot of body energy, spending a lot of time, a lot of effort, sweating, hard work, all these things are there. So as a result of that, if they earn something, so it is kind of a righteous earning. So they have put enough effort, spent fair amount of time, and it is a kind of a honest kind of earning. So that is the one that Buddha appreciate, Buddha recommend. Not that someone is sort of acquiring money with the improper way. Now, that Uttan Sampada, it is not only in the this sort of situation, but it is necessary even in the spiritual life. So you have to have some kind of initial effort to start, even to develop mindfulness, even to develop whatever the spiritual quality, you have to have that initiative type of effort. So without it, you never start. You always may do a kind of a postponement without starting. So Uttan Sampada is always that rising up. Even when you come up with various problems, still you are able to get up, able to rise up. On the other hand, that's a kind of a relevance to mindfulness practice here. If one practices mindfulness, so one can recognize how lethargic feelings, lethargic thoughts are appearing in the mind. Because one is capable of recognizing the mind state. So sometimes mind is not that effortful. Mind is not that efficient. Always kind of looking down or feeling little down, not having enough energy. So as a result of that, we are probably nodding and we are going to the bed, or we ignore the session, or we simply find a comfortable place so that we are sleeping even while sitting. So likewise, many drawbacks are there. But on the other hand, if one is able to maintain proper mindfulness practice, again and again applying their mind to the breath, again and again applying their mind to the, say, rising and falling, or whatever the sensation. So this is where the mind is kept fairly efficient, quite active. Then such kind of an active mind is always very vigilant, always appear like efficient, and whatever the task assigned, he can promptly finish, because he is quite vigilant, he is capable and effortful. Even he doesn't know the subject, still he has the capacity to learn pretty quickly. He has the energy, effort to find the methods, learning the know-how, and then doing it properly. So therefore, this uprightness or this effortfulness is quite necessary in every time, in every activity. Not only in the economic terms, but even in the spiritual terms, spiritual side, that is a required quality that one has to have. Then Buddha mentioned about the Arakka Sampada. Now sometimes we are doing a lot of hard work, earning fair amount of money, but if we are careless in spending, so then actually that is in a way a cause of downfall. Because we don't know exactly how much we have earned and comparatively how much we are going to manage it, and how much we are going to save, how much we are going to spend. So basically we have to have some sort of a mechanism even to save a little bit. And Buddha actually recommended that. And also after earning, how to protect it. Assume that you are building certain house. So what are the security mechanisms that you are using without allowing it to get into fire or theft or flooding or that kind of problems? So how you are going to protect your earnings, how you are going to protect your wealth? That is also something Buddha has highlighted. So it is not merely earning. After you earn, you have to protect it. And again, actually this also apply in the spiritual terms. All the spiritual qualities are quite difficult to earn, quite difficult to develop. And once developed, it is again quite difficult to maintain it. Easily they start fading away. Suppose that you are able to develop some amount of mindfulness by participating into a retreat. After coming back home, assume that you had lot of responsibilities, lot of duties, various tasks. Now you are involved in all those left duties and you are neglecting your mindfulness practice, then ultimately you are completely unmindful. Again and again this can happen. So all the good qualities that we develop is quite difficult to retain. So how to retain those spiritual qualities once we develop them? And according to the Dhamma, we can recognize till one becomes a sotapanna, a stream winner, all the other achievements in our spiritual life can be reversible. You can again get into a type of kind of a downfall. Probably you might have the capacity, you might have the merit power, but if you are not careful, if you are not watchful, what you have earned, what you have developed, all can fade away. So that's a kind of a risk actually that we are running. Even though we have participated in a particular retreat and we work hard, develop our practice, develop a fair amount of mindfulness, develop a fair amount of concentration and tried vipassana, but if we are not continuously practicing it, then all the good qualities that we have earned slowly start fading away. And similarly, if it comes to the mundane terms, say if you are earning some amount of money, if you are not careful about it, if you are negligent about it, someone can cheat, someone can steal, or you may simply ignore it, you are putting onto a wrong place, you are putting into a wrong, say, investment. So all these different possibilities are there. And certain thieves are there, certain taxing schemes are there. So many, many things are there, how to destroy what we have earned. So one has to be careful, not only to earn, but also to protect what you have, what one has earned. That is also highlighted by the Buddha as watchfulness or arakka sampada. Then the third one is called good friendship, kalyana mittata. So this kalyana mittata is also helpful in the spiritual life, but even in the mundane life, if you have good friends, they may help you even when you are in the trouble. They may not neglect you. So that is one of the good qualities of the kalyana mittas, good friends. Even you are doing well or not, they are there for you. So that is the quality of the friendship. Certain friends are not like that. They simply talk well and say praise you only when you are doing well. But when you are in a kind of bankrupt situation, they simply ignore you. Sometimes called as a vachi parama. They simply know the kind of words, but nothing into action. But on the other hand, the proper friend, a good friend, actually is there for you even when you are in a trouble. And the most important thing is a kalyana mitta who is really showing you the path, recognizing your, say, shortcomings and carefully taking those into your attention, asking you to correct yourself and showing those faults in your side and maybe recognizing your strengths and asking you to develop them further. And most importantly, how you are stepping into the spiritual path. So not only say mere sensual satisfaction, how one can step into the development of the mind. So that also mostly happen because of the proper association. A certain good people are there. They are not only practicing themselves, they actually want, they actually advise, they actually encourage others also to practice. So those are the good qualities of a kalyana mitta. So he himself going in the correct path, And he encourages others also to practice, to develop the same thing. There is no anything to hide. And he may teach, he may guard, he may sort of guide. So all those things are there. So this Kalyana Mitata is therefore Buddha recommend even in the spiritual life and again in the mundane life. But on the other hand, if one gets the wrong friend, then definitely you are going to face with the downfall, because they may even cheat you. They may even steal you. And they are not helping you. Probably they may take a huge loan from you, but later they ignore you. They are not paying it back. Then you get into a big trouble. So likewise, certain wrong friends, bad friends, actually putting us into a big trouble. The opposite is true for the true friends, good friends. So they are helping us even when we are in a trouble. The last one is called balanced livelihood, samajivikata. And that is where particularly that how income and outcome, outflow is properly balanced. So if we know how much that we are earning, and if we know how much we have to spend, what are the bills that we have to pay. So all these things one has to manage in the economic terms. So if we are not properly balancing it, then we are in a difficult situation. So, and on the other hand, if we have very big plans, say if we only earn a little and we are going to spend a huge amount, so that's not going to work. Then it is kind of a downfall. Actually, that is mentioned separately in the Parabhava Sutta. So Buddha next talks about ඉතිහෙතං විජානාම ඒකාදසමෝසෝ පරාභව ද්වාදසමං භගවා බ්‍රූහි කිම් පරාභව තෝමුකං. So after the explanation, so that particular deity requesting the Buddha to explain about the 12th factor. Now the 12th factor, appabhogo maha tanho kattiye jayate kule socha rajjang patthayati tam parabhava tomukam. So that is again very much related to the one's own ability. If one doesn't understand one's capacity, asking too much, having very huge hopes, unacceptable type of hopes, unrealistic type of hopes, then Buddha mentioned that is going to cause a downfall. Now example is given here, one khattiya, that means the one who is in the reigning caste. Now in the old India there are caste system, and the Kattiya, Brahmana, Vaishya and Shudra, and the Kattiya is the one who are ruling the country. But unfortunately here Buddha, the example given is about a poor such person. Even though he is coming from a respectable clan, he's a quite poor person. He's not a capable person. But unfortunately, he has a huge plan. He has a unrealistic kind of a expectation. He want to have the government. He want to have the country, since he is from that Kattiya clan. So here Buddha mentioned it's not going to happen because he's really a poor and kind of a weak person. Even though he had a huge plan, it's not going to happen. So this person may get into a kind of a downfall because of this. So that is more into the craving in one's mind. So certain people are having a lot of craving. They don't know about their proper situation. They don't know exactly about their proper capacity. They have huge plans, unrealistic plans, unrealistic hopes. Then those unrealistic hopes makes them further and further depressive, further and further unsatisfactory, and kind of frustration going to happen within their minds. So ultimately they are further getting to a kind of a downfall. They are already in a kind of weak, poor situation, but because of their unacceptable, unrealistic hopes, they are further going to face with the downfall. And the last one actually is a kind of a summarizing. Buddha mentioned, having examined all these different situations, that the wise person, noble, endowed with vision, passes on to an auspicious world. Now, one is careful about these situations. One is careful about these possibilities, trying to avoid them. Now, it's not only that we should know how to develop, we also should know how one can face with kind of a downfall. What are the causes for downfall? Now, those causes for downfall is explained here in this sutta. And if one examine them carefully, one can avoid all those possibilities. Like we discussed, getting to wrong places, getting to gambling, associating wrong women, associating wrong friends, spending a lot of money, which is not comparable with what one earns. So likewise, there are many things that we have discussed. So after properly examining them, one is careful about not getting into that kind of traps, not getting into such kind of situations, because one know that these are the causes of downfall. So one is careful on how to handle things. Either it may be mundane activities or either it may be spiritual activities, both sides. And particularly when it comes to say spiritual side, Buddha talks about sammavayama. So whatever the unwholesome qualities not yet developed in the mind, Buddha asks us to have kind of a desire not to have them, not to allow them to arise in the mind. And for that, one has to have a fair amount of effort. On the other hand, if there are already defilements available in the mind, so one has to have some amount of effort to abandon them. On the other hand, fair amount of effort is required to arouse good qualities, to develop good qualities, to initiate the development of good qualities. On the other hand, when one develops such good qualities, one has to retain them, further develop them, make them into a kind of a fulfillment, completion. That is also there. So likewise, very beautifully, Buddha talks in the spiritual side, how the effort, this what we call Arakka Sampada, Uttana Sampada, is properly happening even in the spiritual life. So actually with that, we can conclude Parabhava Sutta. We can take a new sutta on next time. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Namasarai Bhante, we have four questions at the moment. Just before we start, I would like to make the announcement that due to the daylight saving time change here in Australia, we still have the program starting at 6:30, but in Sri Lanka time, it's 1 p.m. start time, and Swami Nuansa joins at 1:30 for the guided session. Swami Nuansa, is that all right to keep same for next time?
Fine with it. Yeah, I'm fine with it. But one thing is that when I am at Kalalgoda, probably I might have to join at around 2 p.m. So on that day, probably you can play a recording for the guided sitting.
Okay, sir. Yes, yeah. We can do it. Yes. We'll start with the questions now. First question, question number 1 of 4, this mindful sitting. Dear Bhante, much merits for this valuable program which help us to learn the mindfulness technique and build a regular practice. My reflection and question is regarding the sitting practice. I have written several reports regarding how my sitting practice progress around observation of the breath and then ending up in a calm, relaxed, silent space where the breath fades away. Bhante's guidance on how to get used to this unattached state was excellent, and I can evaluate my acceptance, appreciation, and improvement in staying in this state for a continuous period. The thoughts or distractions appear in this state seem to be quite different than the thoughts I have in normal day-to-day mind state. For an example, if I get a lustful thought while in the relaxed state, it is nothing much of a difference from anger or a lamenting thought. Unless I decide to dwell in, there seems to be a choice that I can make consciously. On the other hand, if in a normal day life, a lustful thought can be more colorful with all the attractions which overwhelms most of the time, I can identify the peacefulness, simplicity, and the serenity of the relaxed, silent state we reach in the practice against this heavy, colorful, and sinful day-to-day mind. Is this due to the presence and absence of hindrance, Bhante? Can this be used as part of Dhammanupassana? Appreciate Bhante's explanation how we can use it. Much merits again for your valuable service. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, we can interpret as Dhammanupassana or we can interpret as Chittanupassana. So in the Chittanupassana level, we are not yet having a very refined mindfulness. But we have a fair amount of mindfulness. When lustful thought is there in the mind for a while, then we know, okay, now the lustful thought is there. When suppose there is a thought of ill will is available in the mind for a while, then we notice once it reached to a particular level, we notice, okay, now there is a thought of ill will. But when it comes to Dhammanupassana, your sensitivity has fairly improved. Mindfulness has fairly improved, clear comprehension has fairly improved. As a result of that, even the very first thought may be noticeable. So as you mentioned, so you are now capable of maintaining your mind for some time in the unattached state, say, which is free from defilements, free from any hindrance. So as a result of that, the mind is very clean, fairly spacious, fairly transparent. So your mind is quite clean. It's quite apparent whenever something is going to happen. As a result of that, even the very first thought appearing in the mind is noticeable. So that is what happened in the Dhammanupassana Nivarana Pabba. Anuppannasa kamachandasa upadho hoti tancha pajanati. There was no lust available in the mind in a moment ago, but now there is lust arising within the mind. In the very initial stage, one is recognizing, capable of understanding. As a result of that, now suppose you are quite vigilant, understanding it, and slowly mindful about it. You are not strengthening it, you are not being driven by that lustful thought. As a result of that, it naturally fades away. Uppannasa kamachandasa pahino hoti tancha pajanati. And once it's faded away, now for a fair amount of time, there is no lust available in the mind. Again, mind rests in that equanimity, spaciousness, relaxed, serene state. So likewise in the Dhammanupassana level, so we are dealing in a very refined state of mind. And as you have mentioned, so we can interpret what you are experiencing maybe fairly closer to Dhammanupassana if you are even able to understand the very initial stage of a thought and then allowing it to fade away and again back into that restful state, back into the unattached state, relaxed state. Recognizing, improving these kind of qualities, then more easily one can maintain that pure state of mind. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 4. This is mindful walking. Dear Bhante, can you explain a bit how we know if we are successful in establishing mindfulness during the walking practice? When I start walking, it is difficult for me to keep the observations of the foot ongoing without skipping a few steps or many steps due to various thoughts and shifts of the mind. I think this phase is not what Bhante identify as establishing. Sometimes the observation sticks after a lot of attempt. And is this the indication, Bhante? Appreciate if you can explain again how this evolves when one starts the practice with metta. That's the another question.
Yeah. So as you have mentioned, at the beginning, we have a lot of distractions and mind is under the influence of various hindrances. As a result of that, it's very difficult to retain our attention on several steps even, because mind is jumping. So all the steps, walking meditation is quite boring activity, simply walking. So how walking could be interesting? So mind is searching for interesting things, wonderful things, except this boring walking experience. So it's a kind of a struggle at the beginning to again and again bring the mind back to the walking. So that is where the effort is quite important. Patience is fairly important, because it is quite slow. The progress is fairly slow. That's why it's a kind of a struggle. But if you are doing it again and again, continuously, slowly it may grow, and it could be sort of able to assess. Now suppose this week you are only capable of developing only 5 steps. That is the maximum you can reach. But later in the next week, you probably can make it 7 steps or 6 steps. So as a result of your continuous practice, that means it's a little amount of improvement available. But maybe after another week, maybe now you can walk comfortably 10 steps. Mindfully, you are capable of maintaining first 10 steps. That means at a stretch, you can maintain 10 steps. So likewise, the growth can be assessed. So you yourself can assess how, because of your this effort, because of your exercise, your dedication, how the mindfulness is slowly developing. That you yourself can assess. And on the other hand, when mind get distracted, at the beginning it may, you don't know even when you are being distracted. After a while only you understood, okay, I was in a dream, I was in the fantasy, I was in a fabrication, thinking, past, future, whatever it is. So assume that you are completely ruminating for 10 minutes. Then only you immediately understood, okay, I should walk, now I am on the walking path. But later, that 10 minutes start reducing. Now, say after 5 minutes, you again quickly get that call. You get that reminder, okay, you need to be mindful. You are quite unmindful during that 5 minutes, but after 5 minutes, you get that reminder, you should be mindful. Then 5 minutes become, say, 2 minutes. Within 2 minutes, you can be reminded about that you got to be mindful. Then maybe within 1 minute, maybe within, say, 10 seconds, then immediately you be mindful. So likewise, it's from there also you can recognize that is the wandering time also can be measured in the sense approximately you can understand, okay, approximately how the wandering time has reduced. Because of the practice. More and more you practice, the wandering time or the distracted time become less and less. So you can immediately understand when the mind gets distracted. And the interesting thing is later, so these distractions also help. So once the mindfulness is established, that means you are capable of maintaining your attention where you need. So the mind is fairly tamed. On such situation, you are not much even worried when the mind gets distracted. So that object, the new object also can become a object of your attention. It's not a must to have the same, say, primary object, even when the mind gets shifted, distracted. So this new object also can be observed. So likewise, certain improvements are possible and you yourself can assess how the progress is happening. I think those comments would be useful to you. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 4 is again mindful walking. Dear Bhante, during walking practice, I start getting really drowsy after about 30 minutes into the practice. My mind drifts to various unknown thoughts and stories as well during this period. Yesterday, I thought of doing something for this issue and started labeling and noting again. My left and right foot sensations. It appeared like I am desperately trying to find the deeply buried sensations and trying to label them. But this took away my drowsiness and put me back on the walking practice. Want to check if this is okay and thank you for your valuable guidance. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, this is okay to some extent because, you know, these sensations are quite boring, as we just discussed. Because they are not really exciting, they are not really interesting. And sometimes these sensations also start fading away. Then mind doesn't have much work to do. As a result of that, you feel drowsy, you feel lethargic. So these problems are there. But what happens when you are doing the noting, say left, right, then or lifting, moving, placing. So it's a kind of an effort that you are putting. The labeling is happening. Each and every bodily activity, you are contributing from your mental part as well. So you have to be vigilant to recognize how lifting happen, how moving happen, how shift placing happen, and you have to label them properly. So certain amount of activity, a certain amount of responsibility is given to the mind. So then mind has some work to do. As a result of that, you won't get drowsiness. So these are, you can recognize as certain techniques, as tools to overcome drowsiness. And once you are capable of handling it properly without being drowsy, then you can stop labeling and see without noting and see whether you are able to observe the whole process without noting. Because noting is useful, as you have mentioned, as you have understood, on this kind of a situation. But later, when you are regain the efficiency of the mind, once you are able to establish very active state of mind, then you can slowly abandon labeling or noting and see whether you are capable of observing all these things with a very silent mind. So if you are capable, then no need to have that noting. You can carefully observe, just mere relaxed, calm, silent kind of observation. So those are, that is more fruitful for the practice. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 4. This is the last question. It's a general question. Dear Swami Mahansi, if time permits, can you explain how the walking and sitting mindfulness practice can be linked to the Eightfold Noble Path explained by the Blessed One? Thank you and much merits for this program. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, it's even though it's a few very short statement, I mean, answer has to be a very long answer. Because Noble Eightfold Path has 8 path factors. Samma Ditti, Samma Sankappa, belonging to the wisdom part. Then Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanta, Samma Ajiva, belonging to the Sila, the morality part. And then Samma Sati, Samma Vayama, Samma Sati, Samma Samadhi, belonging to the concentration or the Samadhi part. Now, actually, when it comes to Samma Ditti, Samma Sankappa, Vacha, Kammanta, Ajiva, so these factors are Buddha mentioned in twofold. One side is that there is a mundane type of side. Samma Ditti has its mundane side. Samma Sankappa has its mundane or laukika side. On the other hand, they have their supramundane side. That means Arya, Anasava, Lokuttara, Magganga. That means the noble, without pains, supramundane, and it's a path factor. So likewise, the 5 path factors have these two sides, twofold categorization. Now, in that supramundane type of or noble type of categorization, that is where the development of purposeful qualities are involved. Say for example, when it comes to Samma Sankappa, say you know exactly, okay, it's a matter of developing Nekkhamma Sankappa, Avyapada Sankappa, Avihinsa Sankappa. And in the Subramanian side, it further refines to the level of having a proper vitakka, having proper thought, proper noting. So your vitakka, your thought is, now you are making use for the development of the spiritual qualities. So that is where the labeling, noting are all coming under that. So now say, as we just discussed, when you are doing walking meditation, so now you are, I mean, it is not that you are already a noble person or kind of an Arya, but you are traveling in that direction, you are using certain techniques in that direction to further refine your mindfulness and all those qualities, necessary qualities. So you are using vitakka, you are using the attention, you are using the labeling for this particular task. Say, when the samadhitti is explained in the supramundane side, so Buddha mentioned at different levels, panya, panyinriyam, panya balang, dhamma vichaya sambojjhangang, samadhitti maggangang. So all the different approaches that we are using to develop wisdom is mentioned there. So you are developing fair amount of wisdom using, say, kaya anupassana, using vedana anupassana, using citta anupassana, using dhamma anupassana. Say that wisdom, that vipassana knowledge comes under the panya. Then assume that you are understanding, okay, now the faculty panya, panyindriya is quite capable. You can recognize it. You can understand, okay, today my mind is working well. Say my wisdom is powerful today. I can understand easily anything. So likewise, you understand the operation of the wisdom within your mind. And later when it comes to panya bala, so you are not worried even when mind is sort of ignorant, because you know how to develop wisdom. The techniques are known to you, so you have that confidence. And dhamma vichaya sambojjhanga basically further and further refines these qualities, and your whole practice is now directed towards the Nibbana, not into the typical mundane things. Now you are further developing wisdom carefully, more directed towards Nibbana. So likewise, all these are fairly related. Sila Sikha, Samadhi Sikha, Panya Sikha, all these things are fairly related. So when you are doing walking practice, you have to have some kind of a restraint. You can't do it while talking. You can't do it while looking here and there. So you have to keep certain attention on a particular selected sensations. So that's a kind of a restrainment. So you should not look around. You have to only look on a particular distance. And you should not strongly focus. You simply have to have more focus on the sensations of the foot. So likewise, there's a kind of a rules and regulations involved in this activity. They all comes under the sila. Kind of a behaviorally, how you are contributing towards this activity. That is coming under morality. And then, as you are further developing, so the mind develops. So you develop mindfulness, you develop some amount of concentration. And again, the effort has to be applied. So samma vayama, samma sati, samma samadhi. So they, some parts of those qualities are being developed. And as you are continuing, now the wisdom is going to arise. So you are understanding certain insights. Insights are happening within the mind. And on the other hand, you have to have the proper kind of direction to the mind. Sammaditti pubbangama. So you understand, okay, this is the correct path. This is the correct method. Okay, this is the wrong method. So likewise, you have that proper understanding. So understanding really helps you to abandon the wrong methods, abandon the wrong techniques, wrong beliefs, and to get into the proper technique. Now say someone is telling, you don't need to meditate, you can simply listen to a Dhamma sermon and you can become a Sotapanna. It is true also. That is how Venerable, say Sariputta became a Sotapanna. But we don't have that much of a capacity. We should not have that sort of a conceit. Rather, we are we need to have some amount of practice. Especially today in the more kind of chaotic society, our minds are quite corrupted. So those corruptions has to be abandoned, our mind has to be somewhat purified, concentrated. So as a result of that, I mean, in order to do that, you need some amount of restrainment, some amount of practice in order to develop the mind. So that is where the meditation is required. So likewise, you are having that proper mentality, proper direction, proper urge to practice. So that is again become samaditti, proper view. So all these path factors are therefore fairly interrelated, helping each other, and it happens within, not only in the guided sitting or sitting practice or walking practice. So the whole our life is basically now somewhat attuned towards this Noble Eightfold Path. Actually, in the Satipatthana practice, Buddha mentioned the Noble Eightfold Path as the third part. Now, probably you can remember, I think I have covered a particular sutta called Satipatthana Vibhanga Sutta. There, Buddha mentioned three stages in the mindfulness practice. The first part is the establishment of mindfulness. That is called Satipatthana. The second part is called Satipatthana Bhavana, the meditation of mindfulness. That is where you are carefully observing different phenomena and trying to understand their true nature, how they are quickly arising, passing away, fading away, disappearing, and all this information happens, all these understandings happen at the meditation level, Satipatthana Bhavana. The third part is called Satipatthana Bhavana Gaminincha Patipada. That is nothing but the Noble Eightfold Path. So after you gain some amount of practice, some amount of result through mindfulness practice, through Satipatthana, so you naturally probably understand, in order to further develop these qualities, in order to retain these qualities, I need to have a proper path. I need to have a proper practice. So that is where Sila, Samadhi, Panya become kind of a coherent system which is helpful continue in order to have better results, in order to have a complete results, a fulfillment in your practice. Yeah.
So that was the last question for today. I think we just only have 5 more minutes, so I think we'll end the program. Before we end the program, just to remind everyone once again that due to the daylight saving time change in Australia, we still have the program in Australia at 6:30 p.m. but for Sri Lanka it's 1 p.m. so starting you can join at 1 p.m. from Sri Lanka, and I think towards the end of the month UK time also changes. So you will need to actually check your time. So we will still keep it at 6:30 Australia and 1 p.m. Sri Lanka. So to end the program, I would like to first thank Bhante for his valuable time and answering all our questions. Also thank all the supporters of this program, both seen and unseen, and the participants for joining the program. Theruvan Saranai, Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Yeah, Theruvan Saranai.